Good morning, dear listener. You are tuned into CKLN 88.1 FM, and this is Amer Trambu, your host for today's Amer's Antics, and I am with
DJ RK.
DJ RK, the man.
The man behind the show.
The man behind the show and the man of the moment. DJ yes. RK has been up to some seriously exciting stuff in the last few weeks, and
what would that
we need
be?
We need to ask him. What has he been up to? But before we do that, DJ RK, are you ready to start the show?
I am.
So let's begin. This is Santana, Maria Maria for our intro.
Dedicated to the person that we all know.
Ladies and gents. Yes, this song is dedicated to Maria.
Maria who? In the GMB. Maria who?
This is dedicated to some Maria. Oh.
Good enough for me.
All right, Ryan, are you ready to start with today's show?
Yes, I'm here.
So today's show is going to be a simple half an hour show, 30 minutes, and we're already done with a minute. Now tell us what is up with today's show.
I just want to ask you first. You said I've been up to something exciting for the past few days. What is that? How come I don't know what it is? Are you living my life? Are you living my life on behalf of me or something?
Okay, have you been up to anything exciting?
I've been excitingly at school. How about that? Excitedly at school.
All right, tell us something else exciting then.
Well, something exciting you want?
Yeah.
Is life supposed to be exciting?
Yeah.
Each and every moment?
Each and every moment. If you're grateful for it, then everything will be exciting.
You know what? To tell the truth, I haven't felt that way for a long time.
How much do you have?
How much do I have?
Yeah.
What do you mean? How much money do I have?
No. How much do you have that you're so grateful for? Like a lot or a little? Or yeah. Okay.
I should be grateful for things that I have for sure.
Are you?
There is no doubt about it. Yes, I am.
Who are you grateful to?
To... things.
Who are you grateful to for what you have?
To God.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are you grateful that you're on the radio show?
Yes, I am.
And who knows that you're grateful?
Amir knows that I'm grateful.
No, yeah. You never told me you're grateful to God. I don't mind. You don't even be grateful to me. It's not my show.
It's
just
grateful
a segment
God.
That's mine.
God.
Gratitude is an important part of our lives, and in order to live fully and breathe completely, we need to thank God for every moment that we live.
We have to be grateful for the grain of each grain of food that we eat.
Every grain.
Yes.
But Ryan, what are we talking about today?
We're talking about individualism.
Individualism or yes. Gratitude?
Individualism first.
Alright, let's talk about individualism. Do you have a quote for the day?
No, I don't.
Alright,
we'll
get
a quote.
I
have my own quote.
Alright, let's start with individualism. And this is DJ RK telling you what you need to know this Monday morning about individualism. DJ RK.
Let me ask you this question first.
Ask.
Amir, is true individualism possible?
What's true individualism?
Your own identity that's separate and independent from whatever background that you carry.
True individualism is absolutely, according to me, impossible. As long as you're in a society.
I do agree.
If you decide to live in utopia where you're the only man alive, you are a true individual, but still you have the place where you came from.
How about we assume some collective amnesia? And from tomorrow,
but
everyone,
no, we haven't completed our earlier statement. Why is true individualism impossible within a society?
Because it's human nature to have biases.
It's not about biases. You're just talking about perception and opinion. I'm talking about besides that. If I look at someone,
you're gonna think about the person's background, and possibly think about the historical relations that your ancestors had with his ancestors, right?
No, I don't think about all that stuff.
What do you think about?
I just try to fit him somewhere because we need to, as human beings, we have this tendency to categorize people, to simplify them.
So tell me what happens in your thought process when you see a person.
How can I tell you what's happening in my thought process? It's so subconscious. It's just my thought.
Yeah. So how is it? How is it detrimental to individualism? What do you think? How does it avoid?
Is individualism needed?
In a way, it is very, very much needed.
Where is it needed and why?
In a case where...
What is individualism? Can you please explain to our listener what individualism is?
Individualism, in my point of view, well, according to... in a setting that's appropriate for this radio show that we had today, individualism is the absence of group identity in a person.
The absence of a group identity in a person?
Yes, the cultural or ethnic background in judging a person. And the absence of them in how you see them. Does it make sense to you?
No.
Like, obviously people treat... There are people in the society that that treat people differently according to their backgrounds, right?
Mm-hmm.
And your perception of someone, even if you're an open-minded person, will change.
Based on where you came from, yes.
Yes. Now, that means that we're not free from...
From who we are.
Who we are.
Because at the end
of
it...
Who we really are not.
How is it
we're not free from what we really are not.
Yeah.
Amir. Right?
Wow, you put it right. We are not free from what we are not.
I can call you Indian, but that's not an accurate description of the person that you are. Because it's just a label. It shouldn't tell me much about yourself, right? And if I pick someone from in a certain society,
mm-hmm.
that someone is bound to be radically different than people around. Just because he or she comes from a certain society,
mm-hmm.
that should not be the judgmental factor of the person. Does it make sense?
No, say it again.
What I'm saying is, I want to be free and also be free in seeing other people from all these preconceived perceptions just because where you come from.
Why do you want to do that? Give me an example of a third person. Let's say Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Mm-hmm.
What do you look at him as? No, that's not complicated. Let's simplify it.
Yeah.
So, have you heard of Meher Arar?
No.
The prisoner in the Canadian guy who was a prisoner in Guantanamo.
Otis Kadir.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Meher Kadir. Sorry.
Yeah.
Omar Kadir.
Omar Kadir.
Yeah, Omar Kadir. What do you know about Omar Kadir?
Well, I know he's labeled as the enemy combatant by the U.S. Army.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's say you were just to meet Omar Kadir.
Yeah.
Like he's walking down the street.
Mm-hmm.
So what would, in normal circumstances, happen?
If I don't recognize his face, I don't give a damn who it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's one of the million faces floating in the street.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But if you recognize his face, what do you think?
It's like, oh my goodness, what happened to this guy? He got released.
Okay, and what else would you think?
Good for him.
Okay, and wouldn't you feel that defines how he's going to live the rest of his life, that imprisonment?
That will be an overstatement. I'm sure for a certain time that he will have to bear the consequences of public recognition.
Mm-hmm.
But they estimate that public memory is shorter than 6 months.
6 months?
Yeah. That's why when a government want to break their promises, they break well ahead of the election time, so that by the time election time comes around, you won't be counted towards going against him.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's a very good political tactic.
So that means people forget him?
People forget the fact that these things happen.
Okay, well, yeah. Will people forget that he's not... His origins are Asian or Middle Eastern?
They won't.
Why won't they forget that?
Because it's on his face. That's his appearance.
But doesn't that somehow influence who we are?
Of course it does.
Does our race define who we are? Not define, but at least does it play an important role? It
plays a very, very big role.
So why would I want to ignore that part?
because it's not fair. It creates, for certain people, it creates favorable impressions, like we know.
Yeah.
And some others, for most of others, it creates negative impressions. And that's, the person doesn't deserve that. The individual person doesn't really deserve that kind of reaction. If he has nothing to do with whatever that created that reaction in the first place. What about a baby, 5 years old, happened to belong to that certain category? Are we going to look at them and say, hey, this baby belongs to these people, it must be killed? Or something like that.
So you mean it has a more negative
consequence.
Role to play, negative consequence than a positive?
Yeah, overwhelming.
Can be avoided? What can we do to overcome it?
Consciously act against it, but you cannot be free from it. Or you can take advantage of it and work toward promoting your identity and reap the fruits and enjoy the benefits like certain people do nowadays.
Why don't you give me an example?
Like the white people, they enjoy the privileges of the social recognition abroad.
Mm-hmm.
They get the special treatment from the locals.
Yeah, for example, even in India, I know.
Yeah, there's no denying that.
Yeah.
For them, group recognition will be probably favorable for their own sake, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure I can, besides a certain identity, I can't really think of a favorable reaction that a particular group of people could expect from other people, like as much as these Westerners get in foreign cultures. And enjoy, and these Westerners enjoy the invisibility factor in their own society. They are the people who can become the true individual because of the transparency and transferability of this white identity that everyone, even among the non-white people, can identify themselves with the white people in the media. Did you recognize that?
How can they recognize themselves if they're not white?
Because the white identity has become so universalized.
Yeah, a lot of people can. Yeah,
when you see a white experience on the media, it doesn't.
You cannot relate to it.
You can relate to them in a way.
A non-white or a white?
Their experiences is not defined as or limited to the white experience.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you see an Indian person on the movie, that creates an impression, or Asian person in the movie, that creates an impression that this movie is all about this particular race. But if it's a white character, there is no preconceived recognition that, okay, this is going to be some ethnic movie. If you see a black person on the TV, we know that it's going to be an ethnic movie, or Chinese person, or Indian person. We know that it's going to be an ethnic movie.
And you know that this his character and his race is going to play a role in the movie.
Representing somehow segregation, segregated experience of this race, and you're not gonna see them as what really affects you if you don't belong to that category of people. But the white people and their characters in the media do not have that kind of limiting factors. It becomes universalized that anybody can relate to.
Wow,
that's actually what I have discussed with my professors in my
public policy class.
Yeah.
But you know what? Somehow, the pains of a non-white person, I can relate to them. And that's one of the reasons people could relate with Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Because he belonged to the others.
The marginalized.
Why? That's a strong word, but yes, that's true. Marginalized. And I think everyone knows at the end of it that they belong to some or the other marginalized group at some point or other in their lives.
Yes. And it's very difficult to actually awaken to this perception that if you have not been exposed to or experienced this being a minority person, it's really hard to see and from that perspective. That's why I hear a lot of literatures about Westerners with white backgrounds. They go abroad and for the first time they experience what it means to be a visible minority and they described the experience as such a profound revelation of what it's like to live in a society that they're perceived as foreigners, even if they receive favorable acceptances from the local people. They recognize now they are experiencing this separateness from society in general for the first time, which they have never been taken, because they're always used to this social acceptance they take for granted in their home society.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. We discussed this earlier where I told you in India, when there's a white girl who walks around, they call her a Firangi.
What does that mean?
A foreign girl.
Oh, okay.
And they even call her Gori.
What is that?
Gori is like the fair one.
Oh, okay. Such cute names.
Yeah, yeah. And these are really actually cute names.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you hear an Indian guy around and say, you know, hey, check that girl out, or check the Gori out, she's walking by.
Means she's attractive or
yeah,
what?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah?
It's automatic. Like, all men... It's not that all men would love white women, but I'm saying that in India, when the white woman's walking around, it's a different thing when just any other one.
Becomes a novelty, right?
Yeah, it's a novelty, and she's just not any other race. She's the...
superior race, right?
Yeah, the superior race.
Mm-hmm.
And if any listener doesn't agree with the fact that there is a white supremacy that is within our subconsciouses, I don't think they are much aware, or they haven't traveled around much in life.
That's true. I agree with that.
I've traveled to Saudi Arabia. I've been to Saudi Arabia, and in Saudi Arabia, though a lot of people feel it's a Muslim country, there's a lot of favors and a lot of privilege for Americans and British foreigners.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. Like, they have different access, and there's a different respect. And if you're in Saudi Arabia and you're from the South Asian peninsula, you're treated miserably.
Like if you're from Indian subcontinent?
Indian subcontinent. So if you're either Indian or Pakistani, yeah, or Bangladeshi, you face the wrath. Not the wrath, but you're treated wrath. You're treated like a...
secondary citizen.
Yeah. No, actually a third class citizen.
Third class citizen, huh?
Yeah.
How about other nationalities?
Other nationalities, mostly Filipinos, they're treated the same as us.
How about Japanese?
Japanese, I don't know, I think they would probably be treated differently.
Probably treated better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. So that is why I brought this up, this topic of individuality.
Mm-hmm.
Can we escape from this?
Can we escape
from this? Do we need to escape from this? Is there a need to escaping from this? Or do we actually have to work? Only escape from this, I've been thinking, right?
Mm-hmm. Why do you feel the need to escape from this?
I feel like I'm being someone else that I'm not.
What do you mean?
In their eyes.
Be more precise, so we can understand you better.
And it's like... people expect reciprocation, and people want fairness. I think in most people's minds, fairness is a big deal. Don't you think? Like if you give them something, you're expected to get something back.
Yes, that's true. The law of equal exchanges.
In a way, people want to get same kind of treatment in terms of their identities.
Yeah, and I think they deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what, in this country at least, you're treated a lot better and on a lot equal levels.
I have to agree with that.
And that's something you need to admire about this country, its constitution. It's not about the constitution, it's about the culture of respect that they have for humankind here. This is a country where, yeah, you can talk about white supremacy as much as you want, but you know everyone's working the same job, everyone's paid the same amount for the jobs that they do. You could have anyone sweeping the floor. You would not say, oh, how can this particular nationality not be sweeping the floor? But if you go... I can only say about Saudi Arabia because that's the country I visited. If you go to Saudi Arabia, you will never, ever come across a Saudi. It's the funniest thing in the world.
Working dirty jobs?
Doing a dirty job. You never find him...
Really?
You never find him ever sweeping the floor or being the cleanup guy or...
Who do those things?
The people from the Indian subcontinent.
How about Filipino?
Yeah, and Filipinos. Yeah. A lot of them.
What do Saudi people do? And who are the Saudis? Are Arabic people?
Saudis are people who are originally from the country of Saudi Arabia.
They're Arabs.
Yeah, they're Arabs, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Saudi Arabia, I think almost all Arabs in Saudi Arabia are Muslim. I don't know. I don't think there are none.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, I would think so. That's an assumption, though, but I think it's fairly true. So, what does the Saudis do?
Yeah, what do they do?
No, what do? They're usually involved in businesses or... Okay, no. So, there was this... The last 20 years, I've seen a lot of influx of employees and workers from Asia into the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
So Saudi Arabia realized that they're losing jobs. But the fact is, the only reason the economy is running is because of people like the Asians, the Filipinos, the Indians, the Bangladesh, the Pakistanis, who are playing a role so crucial. And even from Sudan, there are a whole bunch of people who were working in Saudi Arabia to keep their economy alive. But Saudi Arabia was like, what about our people?
What do they do for...
What do they do?
Yeah.
Okay, so... Graduates of engineering are very, very few Saudis. And they mostly study the arts and similar streams. And most graduates in Saudi Arabia are women.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
So, what are the Saudis doing? Now, the Saudis have a legacy of not... being really hardworking. But you need to hire Saudis in your company. That's a necessity. There's
by law.
Mm-hmm. It's called a Saudiization.
Mm-hmm.
Where in order to keep your company running, you would need a percentage of Saudi workers to keep it alive.
Yeah.
And so now a lot of private companies have had to hire Saudis. Now they hire lower skilled Saudis and pay them higher salaries. And most of the people, I'm not saying that all Saudis are silly people hanging around, but a lot of the Saudis are, some of them are really smart people. But my point is that a lot of them are just hanging around and sitting at the table.
Ah, interesting.
And this is Saudi Arabia's solution to unemployment.
So is the economy totally dependent on this oil money?
Yes,
there's no other productive industry that will sustain the country.
The production in Saudi Arabia is actually, they produce a lot of vegetables and everything else through artificial means, but that's not going to be something that can sustain them in the long term. Their production is very, very terribly, plummetingly, drastically low.
So this one industry is sustaining the entire nation.
Not just sustaining it, making it thrive, build its roads, and do everything, including lighting and everything else.
So basically, this one industry is paying for everyone.
It's paying everyone's salaries, everyone's. So as the oil booms, the other ancillary industries keep growing, and all these ancillary industries keep the other industries going and booming.
The government could actually pay people out of its oil revenues.
What do you mean?
Like, they could actually give them free money to let them live.
You know what?
Yeah.
In a sense, it is doing that because it never charges anyone income tax.
Oh.
So they're actually letting them live.
Interesting.
Very interesting. These are interesting people and interesting times, and they would need to reinvent themselves if they want to continue.
That kind of tells me we can think about a revolutionary way of organizing an economy. You don't have to go so crazy about creating new industries. Just find one economy that'll pay the bill and just create crazy amounts of revenue and pay people.
And be a specialist. Like, among all the countries in the world, you've got to be that specialist.
Exactly.
Like, everyone knows China is manufacturing. And Canada... it needs to realize that it's not going to be a manufacturing hub anymore. So therefore, these amounts, subsidies that they've given to auto companies, is never going to last because these companies, especially the big three, will finally have to shut down their offices and their factories in Canada, at least in the next 3 years.
That's the argument of the economic right, saying that if you interfere and give them money, it's going to get wasted, and it's going to only prolong this process of restructuring the economy. You have to let these companies die out. Then the things will build up on its own, and eventually it will reach the certain level of normalcy again. So that's the critics. That's what the critics say about the Obama's rescue package, stimulus package. They're saying the government intervention
into the market
in the form of subsidies and all these things will only prolong
the restructuring,
the necessary restructuring process, weeding out of the weak industries, non-viable industries that need to take place for the economy to thrive in the long run. But Obama is looking at only the short run.
Employment, yeah.
Well, that's one argument, one side of the argument.
But imagine, what if the United States focused on just one industry and everyone was like a specialist in that? Imagine, it'd be a powerhouse.
If one can find that kind of industry, everybody will be doing the same thing. It's not because there's one particular industry they can actually do it, but they haven't found one yet. Obviously, people will be like jumping on it if there's anything like that. What I'm saying is, that kind of reminds me of the ancient Greek economy, where only a certain population were producing things, and the citizens were not there were no need for them to do any labor. Mm-hmm. They could just go participate in politics and exercise, work out their bodies, and socialize with their citizens. And only the slave race were the one who's farming and all that, right?
Uh-huh.
So what I'm saying is, why don't we socialize the entire productive capacity of a society, mm-hmm. and nationalize them all together?
Mm-hmm.
Let these forces work, right? Mechanize everything, mechanize all the production. So these mechanized forces will produce everything for one society.
Okay.
And we socialize and distribute all the revenues where we get and give people this money. So we don't have to be alienate ourselves into doing things that we don't have to be doing. We can only channel our creativity into things that we are really talented in doing.
Wow, that sounds quite like, it's obviously out of the world idea, but it's fascinating because here...
But isn't it possible?
Yeah, it's possible. That way, yeah. I don't have to work for my money, but instead I work and do what I'm great at, and I get better.
It's kind of similar to what Saudi Arabia is doing. There's one huge oil industry can be described as one huge mechanized force that just do the work, and the rest of the economy that's outside, the rest of society that's outside of this oil producing industry, just do whatever they want to do.
But they're not doing whatever they want to do. They're just stuck doing nothing. They're just busy wasting time driving cars and crashing themselves into other cars and driving down the highways and speeding around.
So that tells me
it's not such a great idea. It'll
certainly save us from unnecessary labor, but
you know what, I think
we need some revolutionization of our consciousness so that we won't be venturing into this unproductive
waste. A man is defined not by what he does, but a man is defined by what he does when he has nothing to do.
What do men do when they have nothing to do?
Exactly, what does he do? What does he do at that moment when he realizes he has nothing to do? That's what defines a man. Will he stand up and run?
That's a hard question.
Will he go and cook? Will he sleep? Will he just draw? Don't you think that really defining? A man is defined by that, by what he does when he has nothing to do.
By that, we are assuming that the person has all the resources that he can do whatever he wants to do. Because obviously, people are limited by their resources.
No,
right?
When I say a man is defined by what he does when he has nothing to do, that means he has already, for a particular time of the day, he has already worked his part, eaten his part. He's done all those physical needs and everything else. And then he realizes, oh, he has half an hour.
But there's a difference between a millionaire businessman who's taking a week break doing nothing and this poor student who has finished handing in all these essays.
Okay, but both of them. But still, what will the poor student do when he's done?
Maybe this poor student, what he wants to be doing is traveling all over the world in his free time.
No, but for half an hour. I'm just talking about half an hour.
For half an hour?
Yeah.
They'll totally depend on what the resources, what kind of resources are available at the same time, right?
No.
Like, what if my hobby is, what if I really want to be doing is creating this huge amphitheater and rocking out on the stage? Do I have the resources to be doing that?
So for that half an hour, maybe you could go and practice some music and twang some guitar.
What if you don't have the money to buy a guitar?
You can go and get it somehow from somewhere, or go to a friend who has it.
So what I'm saying is, if you want to really measure someone by what he does in the leisure time, then give them the money and resources that he needs to be doing whatever without any limitation that he wants to do.
Yeah, that would be a more equalizing stage to judge them. You know what, I think it's better if this Amr's Antics show, we talk about a country and discuss it.
Let's do that.
It sounds more interesting. That will even increase our our understanding of a country, and even the listener would know more about another country besides Canada.
Certainly, although our limited knowledge is kind of like set the range of discussion.
Okay, why don't we do one thing? Next week, we'll talk about Iran. Not just Ahmadinejad, we'll talk about Iranian women and men.
I don't know much about them, actually.
And the Shah of Iran and Ayatollah Khomeini. I don't know much about them, but let's watch them.
What happened to the Shah of Iran?
I don't know. Let's find out.
Okay.
Okay, dear listener, that's what's in store for next week. Till then, Amr Trumbu and DJ RK will sign out. This is Amr's Antics, and we wish you a
good day and good morning
and a beautiful week ahead, because this is
Amr's Antics.
You can listen to us at amersantics.podomatic.com. That's amers.podomatic.com. Or you can email us with your feedback at our cklm.fm email ID. That's atrambu@cklm.fm. Dear listener, thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Goodbye.